You are now listening to The Social Hour.
They're not PC, so if occasional foul language turns you off, then you have all been warned. This is the calm before the storm.
You want to fix them with a helmet and put them on a short bus, or do you want to like keep them in your basement and make them your sex slave? Or sometimes both.
Oh my god.
Get ready for the social hour.
Live from Dice World Studios in San Antonio, Texas. This is the Social Hour. On today's show, comic book creator Ray Jameson. And now your host. People always talk about how great Blue Zones are because they have the most centenarians on the planet. But he doesn't want to live anywhere with a bunch of half-horse, half-human creatures. Dice Casillas!
Mollum Keen, everyone, welcome to the show. This is The Social Hour. I'm Dice. What's up, guys? Thanks for coming back. Thank you for hanging out for another episode. We appreciate you being here. As usual, tell a friend if you like what you hear. Even if you don't, tell a friend to not listen. We don't need that riffraff hanging around either. But guys, thank you for being here. We took last week off. I had a lot going on, but I'm back for you, baby. Another great episode this week. Before we get in with our guest, guys, go to DeeceComedy.com. Check out everything going on across the network. Live dates, live shows. I will be at Bandera Brewery in Bandera, Texas this Saturday. And then I'm taking a week off before I head out on my 2026, start of this little tour I'm doing this year. I'll be in Southern California the 19th. I think I'm in Long Beach. The 20th, I am in Arcadia. The 21st, Costa Mesa, California. 22nd, at Mic Drop Mania in San Diego, California. That's a cool club, so tickets are going fast for that one. Hit that up soon. The 23rd, I think I'm going to be hanging out and having lunch with comic book writer Scott Lobdell. We're just going to be chilling in Long Beach having lunch somewhere. And then 24th, I'll be in Santa Barbara, and 25th in Riverside. So guys, come check out those shows somewhere in Southern California, and then I'll be home for a couple days and off to Arizona, Phoenix, Chandler, Tucson, other places. I'll announce those dates soon. And also, guys, the Kickstarter for Killstand number 4, the pre-launch page is up, so go check that out. We've got links all over the place. Follow us at inferno.earth on Instagram for updates, but we've been posting a ton about it there. Give us a follow on the pre-launch page. That helps us when we take off, get that algorithm in our favor. And you're going to have some exclusives, and I think I'm going to do a little bonus thing, little cool thing I haven't announced yet, but I was going to do this after this Kickstarter, but I think I'm going to do it with this Kickstarter, so kind of a cool thing people have been asking for, and it's finally coming to fruition. We'll talk more about that later. I'll probably be announcing it on the Instagram page soon. Also, let's see what else is happening in March. It is fucking March already. Christ. The 27th through the 29th, I will be at Mockingbird Lane, a really cool convention in San Antonio, Texas. I'll be one of the featured guests, and I will be doing stand-up comedy there on the 28th also. So come to the show. If you're a VIP for the show or a vendor for the show, you get to go to the comedy show. If you're not, fuck off and kick rocks, buy a ticket to another show. I love you, though. All right, that's it, guys. We're going to get into it with our guest today. He is coming to us all the way from somewhere. I'm not sure where. I think in Canada, though. If I remember our conversation from the other times we've spoken. Please welcome to the show Ray Jameson. Ray, how you doing, man?
Doing pretty cool. I'm not a big fan of like gang signs and stuff being up here in Winnipeg, but I guess this would be an N. I'm on the north side. Would that be a cool thing?
North side of Winnipeg. All right, that's right.
East and west side. I'm the north side.
The north side. What's the hockey team in Winnipeg? Is it the
Jets? Like New York and the NFL.
All right, right on. What part of Winnipeg, Canada, is Winnipeg in?
It's in the central hub. The province is called Manitoba.
Okay.
And back in the day, turn of the century, well, not this century, the one prior, earlier 1800s and even earlier, they had like pioneer, what they would call the fur trader era. So if you needed to get to the other side of the country, you most likely were going through Winnipeg. So at one point, it was a huge deal for Canadian standards, of course, but it's still pretty good. I like this place. It's been very, very good to me. I've been here 16 years now.
Where'd you live before that? Are you from Canada? Lived in Canada your whole life?
I did. I was born in Southern Ontario. I lived on a farm just outside of the Hamilton Airport, and I went to school at Wayne Gretzky's hometown. That, I guess that would be kind of an interesting piece All of information right. about myself, but just like everybody else, just trying to make it, finding work. I moved across country, left all my family and friends, and carved out something of a life for myself.
Yeah, out there in Winnipeg, huh?
Yes, sir.
Ontario, that's like the Far East, right?
Yeah, that's like your Toronto, Niagara Falls. Yeah, that's your Southern Ontario area. Ontario's quite the size compared to the rest of the country. It takes up a significant portion.
So that's where they have the French Canadians.
That would be one more province east or one more province west.
Oh, okay.
Predominantly east in the province of Quebec or as they like to call it, Quebec.
Yeah.
And out here in Manitoba, there is a French area out there known as the Franco-Manitobain, as they refer to themselves. And they're very different. Well, I mean, a lot of similarities in the two different French cultures, but there's a lot of differences too. It's very interesting.
I've heard that the French Canadians in Quebec are very particular, I'll say.
Well, put it this way. I heard a comedian once say, and this is years ago, you can't turn right on a red light, but you can drive right through it in Montreal.
Okay. Yeah. I just see. I always hear about how the, you know, like I have Canadian friends from like Toronto and stuff and from that area, and they just hate the French Canadians, and the French Canadians hate them. It's so funny when there's like, you know, these like, it's like white on white crime, you know, it's like, it really is. It's like every liberal in America's wet dream, like white on white crime, statistics
are through the roof. On KD crime. We'll put it that way.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know about their sexuality, but I'm just saying, you know, what they could be, I don't know. I don't judge. But I assume all French people are though. So it's just so the way they, you know, like they know English, but they won't speak it. They only speak French, and they really, you know, they pretend like they don't speak English to not communicate.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. There's and this happens anywhere. You hear enough things about a different group, you get your guard up, mm-hmm. and maybe you have a bad experience or two, which furthermore puts your guard up.
Yeah.
So I'll give you an example about somebody I met at a gym I was training at, with a friend. The friend sees somebody staying to himself. Now, despite us being in the French area of Winnipeg, he was very like cautious, and we were able over time after a couple of workouts, ask him some questions. We find out he's from Quebec, and we said, let me guess, you think that everybody in this province hates your kind? He says, yes. Well, got bad news and good news. Bad news is it's true, but the good news is you're one of us now. Welcome aboard.
Yeah. <It's> Yeah, it's true. Now get out. We don't like
you. No, no, join us. You're one of us now, so you don't count. You're one of us.
Yeah, yeah. It's funny. Canadians are just like, especially central. I had this. I have a friend who lives in Edmonton. I think it's Edmonton. Mm-hmm. Is it, where is it? Is there another E city?
Big Edmonton. Let me see. I mean, there, I is think it it's like Edmonton. Estevan?
No, I think it's Edmonton. Cause it's kind of like one of the bigger cities. Mm-hmm. And so I went down to Belize years ago, and literally this is how I travel. I was like, oh, I got some time off. I don't have anything on my calendar for a few weeks. So I just like, you know, booked a one-way ticket to Belize like three days out, and just packed a backpack and left. Like I didn't figure travel, like a car. I didn't figure out a hotel. I'm like, I'll just figure it out when I get there. You know, that's the joy of being young and single,
that's
right?
Life in your 20s, man. Yeah, that sounds like an adventure.
Yeah. Just like, I'll be fine. And the funny part is right when I got there, like literally I turned my phone back on after being in the on the flight, and my phone just like exploded, like comically. It just stopped working. So I'm like, all right, well, now I have no resources. There's not like a Verizon store here, like, you know.
Right.
So I'm like, I knew I wanted to get to this island off the coast of Belize. It's called San Pedro. So I'm like, all right, I'll go down towards the water. There's water taxis. Like, I'll figure this out. And I'm on a water taxi, and you know, they're stopping at all these stops, picking people up. It takes about an hour to do it and get out there. And I'm on the boat, and there's this lady, this girl, and her mom, I find out. But this girl starts talking to me, and she's like, oh, yeah, I'm here from Canada. I've been here for a while. I've been scuba diving, doing scuba diving adventures and stuff. I'm like, cool, cool. She goes, are you here with anyone? I'm like, no, it's just me. I just, you know, always wanted to come here, so here I am. She goes, are you staying anywhere? I'm like, I don't know. I'm like, I'll figure, you know, I figure worst
we'll
case.
We'll figure it out.
Yeah, it's 90 and there's a beach, you know. I could sleep in a fucking palm tree if I have to. And she's like, well, I'm staying at this hostel, and it's like, it's cool. There's some cool people there. Like, you can come with me, and we'll see if we can get your room. And I'm like, or like a bed. I'm like, great. So we get to the island, and it's nighttime now. And she goes, hey, I got to walk across the island because I got to go to an ATM to get money out because I have to pay for scuba diving tomorrow. And I'm like, okay. She goes, do you want to come with me? I'm like, sure, no problem. So I'm walking with her, and we're walking across this desolate island. You know, it's middle of the night at this point. It's dark. There's dark alleys, kind of not well put together, you know, infrastructure. And I look at her, I'm like, you know what? I go, you Canadians are so much better than us Americans. She's like, why? I go, because I am a stranger you met on a boat alone in a foreign country 19 minutes ago. And you said, hey, do you want to walk across a dark island with me to get money out of an ATM? And she's like, oh, man, I never even thought of it that way. I'm like, don't worry. I'm not going to do anything. I just am telling you, like, maybe head on a swivel a little bit more moving forward, you know. And that was 10 plus years ago. We're still really good friends. But it was just such a funny way to, like, you know, you would never have that happen in America where some girl would be like, come on, stranger, I'm going to go get money. Come with me, you know.
Immediately, if a woman were to tell me to do that, I would be like, okay, she's got friends with guns and they're going to take all my stuff. Come with me to this dark alley. Oh, yeah, absolutely. And then give me your stuff, you know.
Right. I mean, I didn't have that much stuff, so I wasn't worried about it. You know,
you can have my debt or something.
Like, phone is broken, and I have this backpack with like a couple. I mean, really, I just pack like a couple tank tops, and I wear a pair of board shorts and sandals, and that's basically.
You had the dude bro starter kit.
100%. I'm like, listen, nice. I travel light.
I love it.
I literally used to get stopped coming because I go to Costa Rica, Belize, Panama. I go down there a lot. And I'm Latino to begin with, but I go down there and I will go down there for a month, 6 weeks, something like that. And I travel to different countries, you know, I'll go to Nicaragua and Guatemala and a bunch of different places. And, you know, my passport's getting stamped. I'm going around these countries. And every time I get back to America and I go through customs, it's like you scan your passport and it takes a picture of your face. And it's like, you know, usually most people are like, yeah, you're good to go. Every time it takes a picture of my face, it's like, we're going to need to talk to you about some things. And it's always extra security. They always come up. They're like, ask me questions. Like the last time, this lady's looking at my passport. I went to Costa Rica and Panama and like Nicaragua and Guatemala. And I was jumping around and looking all the places, stamped and dates. And she's like, you with anyone? I go, no. She goes, no one is traveling with you. I go, no. She goes, you've been gone this long? And I go, I was gone for like 6 weeks. I go, yeah. She looks at me. I literally just have a backpack on my back. And she goes, where's all your stuff? And I go, I'm not a fucking chick. I fucking travel light, travel light. And she's like, no
one
way.
One piece of luggage for every day, for every part of the day.
Yeah.
Sleeping, breakfast, all the other meals.
They're just convinced I'm like muling drugs, you know. And but to be fair, when I come back, I haven't shaved. Just like my beard's like crazy. I've got this wicked tan and hair all, like I look pretty swarthy, you know. I just, so.
That's awesome.
It's a wild time, but yeah. So anyway, Canada is that's.
About a month back for one weekend with wind chill in Fahrenheit, it got as cold as minus 54.
Yikes! Yeah, man, that's too fucking cold. I don't know why.
That's an exception to the rule. It never gets quite that cold where I am, but that it was just all the right conditions that Arctic air came in. I know it hit the States as well. It was just it hit hard, and it was like. The snow is like glass when you walked on it.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I lived in Montana for a while, in central Montana, or the High Line, where you can basically throw a rock across the border. I've been in, the coldest I've ever been in was Great Falls, Montana. It was negative 44 with wind chill, and that was
That's pretty
just,
cold, Dan.
It's fucking, it's stupid. It's insane. I mean, really. I don't know how you managed it. One day like that, I'd be like, I'm fucking moving to Mexico. This is bullshit.
No, we just stay indoors and have a good time, man.
Drink some Molson and call it
the warmest of whiskeys.
You got more time to work on the comic book, right?
That's exactly right. You just turn lemonade into the scenario around you.
Yeah, that's so. Tell us about the book, Madcaps. You've got a Kickstarter coming in mid-April. You've got issues one and two out now. Give us the kind of elevator pitch for the book, and we'll go from there.
Sure. So, I already mentioned earlier how I moved across country for opportunity and other reasons. One of the things about moving across country in my early 20s is I left everything, friends, family, certain circles, certain infrastructures I was accustomed to, and I went on this adventure. One of the things about anybody that has a friend or a circle of friends, as you age, you just, in most cases, not always, but in most cases, you just don't get to see your friends like you used to.
Yeah.
And there's lots of different things. Usually they have to do with responsibilities, a job, wife and kids. For me, moving. And I'm sure there's many other things. But this book is an homage to that level of camaraderie. It is just about four friends meeting back in their hometown for the first time in a while. Within the first handful of pages of issue one, they get caught up in what appears to be an undead outbreak. Right at the start of it, they're able to help the local guard stave off this outbreak. And it is concluded, I shouldn't say concluded, it is surmised that this outbreak has something to do with a local drug called Weave. And all three issues take place in one night. And it is what is going on between this outbreak, this drug, are they connected, are they not? And by the time we hit issue three, which is coming out in roughly 6 weeks' time, there's a lot of action. Mm-hmm. So issue one and two, they're to quote my interior artist, Victor Medina, he has said that my book has justified action. Sometimes when you have up and coming writers, depending on the story, the action's justified. Sometimes you need high action in all of the pages. But for mine, the action is, I'm not scared to slow it down at parts and then build it back up and hit harder, as you've seen with issue one, which you've read already. This third issue, it's got to end. So beginning, middle, end, all three issues. This last issue is just, they throw down like Greeks holding dishes, man. It gets pretty intense.
So it's kind of like a, is it fair to say this is like a fantasy in the fantasy genre? Okay.
That was the last thing. Sorry. This book is, like I said, an homage to camaraderie, but it's through the theme of fantasy, but told through the medium of a comic book. That would be the overall pitch. Apologies.
So what made you choose the I mean, was it, did you want to write fantasy and found a story you wanted to tell, or did you have a story you wanted to tell and found the genre after? How did that go?
Well, this story already took place roughly 15 years prior to me writing it. I play a lot of tabletop, most common known as Dungeons and Dragons.
Okay.
I made this homebrew campaign. Homebrew meaning it's your own rules, your own lore, your old fantasy. You're not running off of modules. And I played it with friends. I mentioned how I moved across country. I was continuously looking for excuses to hang out with my friends via webcam. It's not like I can fly home all the time.
Yeah.
So we made this really cool story. I was the dungeon master and they were the players and they played it out. And we have this really cool lore of different cities, different regions, some really cool stuff. I'm actually on the verge of finishing up another campaign that takes place in the same area right now, which is really crazy. One of the biggest reveals at the start of this campaign that we're currently doing, these guys get marooned on an island. They all jump on a lifeboat for various reasons, but they get chased by pirates. They can't leave the island. The current is too strong due to the presence of a kraken. So they're stuck on the island and these pirates are hunting them down. And it's revealed, the coolest reveal is one of the players is the captain and there's a mutiny against and the captain's being chased. So the whole time was actually these pirates chasing one of the players, but the other players had no idea. So the captain was actually relying on the others to keep him safe, which is a really cool concept. But anyways, many stories like that. This story here that I've written, the main difference between the story that happened that inspired this comic and the comic itself is I took out the characters that the players were playing as and I injected my own. So I based them off of people I know and various different references going on in the world. And I'm very, very happy with how easy it was for me to put the story together. It was very nice to, I don't know if you've ever done this, if you're ever working on a project and it almost felt like you're just putting in variables and the formula just processes the variables. Mm-hmm. For me, the friends interacting in the story was the easiest part for me, even though that was the most unique because the rest of the story, like I said, already played out. I knew where it was going. But despite all of that, the easiest parts is writing how these friends get along, how they rub each other the wrong way, how they synergize, how sometimes they'll disagree and sometimes step on each other's feet. And it was very satisfying to see that these characters meshed so nicely in my mind as I was writing this out.
Yeah, so I mean, it's three issues. Is there a follow up, or with these same original characters?
Go ahead.
With these same characters, you looking at doing something else with these characters after this?
The original plan was no. This is my first time on the creative side of the comic book game, and I just wanted to finish a story arc.
Yeah.
I just treated it as a mini series. I didn't want to be somebody so arrogant to say this is going to be monthly, ongoing, forever for the next 30 years, and then it burn out after seven issues. I wanted a goal. I wanted to reach the goal and end it. If I do anything more with these characters, I think I'll just do another mini series and just take it one little story arc at a time with zero intention of solidifying that I'm actually going to do another story arc after.
Yeah. Which honestly, I think is smart. I mean, I don't know how many, if you do conventions and stuff like that, but like, I can't tell you how many people come up and ask me for advice or how to get started or where to, and not like I'm some fucking all-knowing guru or anything like that, but they ask me cause I'm there, they're like, you gotta know what's up.
You're at least a step above me.
Yeah. I don't know. But I'm always like, well, I go, tell me about what's your story about? And they start to talk and you can tell almost instantly if this is something that's like they've got a grasp on yet, right? And so most of the time they start talking and talking and talking and talking, and I'm like I still, and I'll just be like, look man, I'm not sure what your story is even about. You haven't gotten, like, this is, I think you need to sit on it a little more, you need to work on it. But also I go, do yourself a favor, write something that's digestible to begin with. You know, write something that has a beginning, middle, and end. Like, don't write your Tolkien-esque swan song, fucking Lord of the Rings, J, you know.
Just write a thing.
Yeah, G.R.R. Martin or J.R. Martin, whatever his name is, fucking, you know, 10 book.
Your grand epic. Opus.
Yeah, like, that's not, you know, because you're going to have a hard enough time getting someone to buy one of your books. Right. Like that's hard enough. So to be like, here's part one, hang in there till part 10,000 for the payoff of like, no, like, have something that you can be like, it's 3 issues, it's 6 issues, it's 10 issues. Yes. It's like maybe even 12. I would say 12 is like the most you should bite off to begin with. And then, you know, then it's someone. Hey, where do I get the next one? Well, it's, you know, it's only 10 issues or it's only 5 issues. So, you know, every issue counts and we'll get you the next one. And instead of just this idea that you're doing this big grand thing. So I think that's smart, you know, keeping it that way. Because, I mean, then it's open. If you want to do another one, it makes sense. You can.
Yes.
If you want to move on to something else, you can. You've told that story, you know.
Yeah. And one of the interesting things about writing a story, you mentioned people asking you for advice. In my limited experience, my opinion about writer's tips, and you've kind of hinted on this, but I want to expand on it a little bit. Don't share anything with anybody until you've finished your first draft.
Mm-hmm.
I'll give you a good example or a parallel, if you will. If you've got to put shingles on your house and you tell 40 people, suddenly you're talking to 40 roofing experts and they'll give you all conflicting information. Right. But if you get your house shingled, all of those 40 people be like, oh, hey, that's cool. And the critiques are more towards your favor as opposed to getting started and going off in these various reasons. Similarly to writing stories, if you only write like a first chapter and you show that to people, they're all going to have these great ideas with great intentions. But a lot of them are going to be like, you might like them, but they're steering you off of where your end game mm-hmm. is going. But if you finish a draft and you show it to somebody, all of the opinions and advice is going to more likely be able to aid you because they see where your destination is with the story.
Right, right, right. Yeah, it's, you know, you kind of have to be able to get it all out there first. It's really easy to get led astray or be, you know, or get frustrated because people aren't getting it. Here's what I like when I work with other writers, or if I'm trying to get feedback, basically all I'm trying to say, like, does this make sense to you? Like, if there's something, you know, like, I don't want, you know, like, tell me if there's anything you're confused about, but I'm not really taking notes on like the storytelling aspect or a character's arc or something like that. Like that, I know where this is going. I know it's, I just want to make sure like you're not confused about any elements of this, right? But yeah, really it's kind of got to do it and then see what happens from there, you know?
And refine accordingly. Yeah. One of the toughest things for me, this is my first time writing my own comic, of course. It was writing the thing and sticking through until it's done. For me, it's, and I've said this lots of time on other podcasts, it's torture not sharing something, especially if you're really excited over it. For the last 3 Aprils, I have been releasing 1 issue at a time, finishing with this April. Well, I've been waiting 3 years to talk about this third and final issue.
Yeah.
And I haven't been able to. That, for somebody like me, torture.
Yeah.
Absolute torture. Like, I don't know how people do that. So I can understand people getting, A, really excited over a book, and then B, being very exhausted, especially if they're saying nothing to anybody. And then finally, C, the burden of the previous two things actually, like, just shutting a person off from it.
Yeah. 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 It is, cause I mean, it is a passion, something you love. You want to talk about it, but there's kind of a, you kind of got to do it and let people see the product afterwards, you know, cause it's, as someone who's worked in a lot of creative mediums, you know, there's a certain point where there's too much input you know, like, you know, like I used to write for these comedy sites, right, and do comedy articles for them. And it's like editors, you know, I always say editors are mostly worthless. They're only editors because they're not good enough to write the product they're editing. You know, they want to be writers, but this is the closest they can get to it. and this guy, my editor, used to edit all my articles to the point where he was like taking jokes out, you know, and like edit or like rewording it, changing wording. And I'm like, no, this is how bad you are at your job. I'm like, you don't even understand where the jokes are. Right. Like you don't even understand. You're rewording it. And now it's not funny. Now it reads like a fucking TED talk instead, like script instead of, you know, so you kind of have to be also understand that, as the artist, you kind of have to it's your job to keep the integrity of it, you know, and figure out how that looks.
Yes.
And, you know, understand that not every audience is your audience. That's a big part of it, too. And that's hard. Yes. But I mean, that's a big part of it.
Yeah. Finding that niche. Another thing on the writing side. I don't have too much experience on Kickstarter, but the little I have, I do know that most people who have never run a Kickstarter, or a lot of people that have only backed, oh, okay, so you put this on Kickstarter and people buy in, and many people internalize it. It's not the truth, but just from the impression they get, okay, well, you just put it on there and shout out to the void. But in reality, it's months, weeks, years of work to gain that network, get those people interested. And it's not even getting the people interested. How can somebody say no to your product if they don't even know you exist?
Right.
So you for me, mine's fantasy. Mine has tabletop RPG. Mine has comic books. Those three elements, social media groups, podcasts like I'm doing right now, of all of those three different themes, I go on and I talk to people. I'm an extrovert. It's something I love to do. I'm doing it right now. It's not my day job, but I don't feel burdened by doing it. But with that said, you need people to be aware of your product once you've gotten the writing portion down. And then again, it's another task, right? So if you're really, truly that passionate about something, there are times it will not feel like fun. You have to buckle down, get through the tough stuff, get it done because you have that end goal you really so badly want. Well, if you really, really badly want it, you got to take those hits up front. Last year, promoting issue 2 of the Madcaps, I was on, from January to April, a total of 62 podcasts and streams.
Wow.
My goal is to beat it this time, and I'm within 20. So it's possible, but there are times that's 4 or 5 podcasts or streams in a week.
Yeah.
And if you're writing a story, people don't think about that. People don't, they think, okay, I'm going to write the story. The story is going to be good. People will hear about it. It will catch wind. Maybe it'll be successful, but at least I got the story out of the way. Well, how does it catch wind? How do people hear about it in order to like it and spread it on? You like my stuff. I promise, like, for me personally, when anybody asks me about it, the first thing I say is, well, I'm reminded of some coworker I have. He makes this joke. I'm a big deal. Don't believe me? Ask me and I'll tell you. Yeah. I'm a big deal at work. And sometimes going on a podcast, I try to avoid saying that. But one thing I do say is, here's some advantages of my story. A, no disrespect to DC or Marvel or anybody else, but you don't have to know 70, 80, 90 years of lore to understand my book.
Right.
3 stories, beginning, middle, end. I attached talent to a story. And I think those two things I feel are worthy of the comic industry. I'm not saying whether it's worth awards, but I know that it isn't on the terrible side. I think it's worth people taking a chance on me. And that's after writing the story. So some people, if they really took in all the work behind it to get it to that point, it's very understandable why most people will just stop a project that they've started. But in reality, to quote one of the police officers in The Dark Knight, when he's talking to Heath Ledger, he says, I know you're going to enjoy this. I'm just going to have to enjoy it more. And you have to have that attitude going towards these projects. Well, I could put it off and 5 years from now kick myself, or I'm going to put in my dues right now and talk to people. And mm-hmm. like I've got after this podcast, mm-hmm. I'll be putting my kids to bed. So I fed them supper. We talked for a bit when I picked them up from school, but I'm missing this hour. I'm not abandoning them. I'm not like neglecting them.
But think how much you could get done if you did. I mean, you know, imagine what you.
Yeah, I could see them every other weekend and be left alone. You know,
I mean, if you, yeah, sure, you could. I mean, man, you could move to Florida and never see him again. A lot of dads.
Yeah,
do that.
Exactly, exactly. But the fact of the matter is, there's times when, like, I could be. I haven't played a brand new video game in the last 13 years because of life and other projects. But if I was playing games right now, I would not be putting into this story. And that's the point.
Right.
So when you're going to commit to something like this, yes, you could take your time on one novel over the course of 30 plus years. There is nothing wrong with that. But if you're looking to just make more stories, it won't write itself. And then when it's done writing itself, what's the next step? And where are you supposed to roll up your sleeves and put on that stiff upper lip mentality and get the job done?
Yeah. Yeah. It really is. I mean, when people ask about, again, you know, getting into comics, making a comic, what's the best advice for indie comics? My two things, what do you need to make indie comics? I said, time and money. that's what you're going to need, because other than that, if you don't have those two things, the rest doesn't matter. You know, you do, obviously you need to be able to write a story and put it together, but it's money. The finance,
or you could be an editor and pay another writer and you can alter their story.
Yeah, that's true. and you know, you need the time to put in to do it, the time to, you know, people get into this and they just want to create, like, I get it. I got it. I do this cause I want to do comic books, but you also have to realize you become your own editor, your own promoter, your own manager, your own content creator. You know, you're running your Instagram, you're doing conventions. I mean, I did 36 conventions in 2025, you know, so
that's a lot,
like,
man.
Yeah, that's the travel, the lodging, the you know, slanging books all day, but that's what it takes to get the book out. I wanted to get the book out, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Because like you said, you can't just do it and then hope people find it. I mean, you can, but people
aren't
going to
find it. The chances are there, but very, very low.
Yeah, you know, if you can make a book and make a website and put your book on your website, and the odds of people finding it are extremely, extremely low.
Right.
You know, it's kind of a lot of front-loading time and effort, which is... it's hard these days for people. I think that's the biggest thing. You know, like I tried to explain this to, I had a couple of buddies that, you know, they didn't do comedy, but they always loved it. And I had an opportunity to kind of make this show that we were talking about making, like a sitcom type thing. So I'm like, okay, let's, and they wanted to get involved. So I'm like, okay, let's do this show. You know, we had to shoot a pilot and stuff like that. So I'm like, you know, one of my buddies was like really good on editing and effects and like could edit the whole thing, lighting the whole, like using all the editing software on his computer. He did that for a living anyway. My other buddy was just kind of a card. I'm like, you'll be like a good character actor and I'll, you know, we'll workshop some ideas and I'll script it out. And, you know, I wrote a 10 episode first season, 22 minute long episodes. And, you know, it's like the only time we're free were Sundays and Monday, Sunday nights and all day Monday. We were both free. So that's when we work on it. But one of my buddies was a really big football fan. And Sundays and Mondays are big football days, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I would I told him, you know, I lived in Washington at the time, so he liked the Seahawks. I'm like, I go, listen, man, I go, you know, what if I told you that for the next 3 to 5 years, you, instead of watching all 16 Seahawks games, you get to watch seven, maybe six of them, you know? But then in 6 years, till you die, you can have season tickets, box seats in the stadium. Would you take that deal? And he's like, oh, fuck yeah, that'd be great. I totally do that. And I tell him, like, great. I go, that's what I'm trying to do for us right now. I'm trying to get us to focus, to do this now. And if we can make this thing work, then that'll happen, you know? But like, right. And if without it, you know, without that work and stuff, it's just not going to happen. And, you know, eventually it all kind of fell apart. They stopped doing their thing, their part, and I kind of moved on to other projects. Right. So, you know, and, you know, now I think, you know, one, I think they're both bartenders still in their 40s. It's like, yeah, well, you know, it's, you could have, we could have done something.
It's hard. It's very difficult to reject comfortability. So you mentioned that person giving up all that time watching something he really, really likes.
Yeah.
It's hard to look past that and put eyes on the prize. Like I heard this term once, or this phrase, there's nothing more dangerous than a motivated man with nothing but time on his hands. When you start getting leisures in life, it's understandable your motivation drops because things are going well. Mm-hmm. How do you stay hungry? You have goals. If there's things you want to do, you know what? I wanted to watch this movie tonight and I'm looking forward to this new frozen dish I found at the grocery store. Yeah. But the reality of it is, okay, well, two bags of ramen noodles and let's get some stuff done. And yeah, I'm going to sleep good on the weekend, but I got to give up some hours right now.
Yeah.
And that's how it works.
Yeah. I think that front loading effort thing is what people really don't have in life. I talk about this a lot. People listen to the show a lot, probably sick of hearing me say this, but yeah, it's that way with anything. You know, I mean, I used to do music. It was that way with music. I do comedy for a living. You know, I get to do it for a living. It pays my mortgage now. But, you know, for a long time, it was like, hey, do you want to drive 5 hours to do 5 minutes and we'll give you $20 and a hot dog and you can sleep in your car? And I, and I was like, fucking, yeah, that sounds great. You know,
I need to do this. Yeah.
So, you know, and it sounds insane because like if I describe the things I did just to get some stage time at like real shows, people would be like,
yes,
what, you get paid like $500 for that? I'm like, no, I didn't even get paid for that. You
know? I got a pat on the back.
Yeah. But like that got me to where I am now, to where now I'm able to do this for a living and it makes sense. I never right. would have, you know, no one just walks up to you and be like, you're hilarious. How many commas do you want in this check I'm going to make out to you? You know?
Commas, not zeros, commas.
Yeah, that's yeah.
Well, one thing I at the turn of the century, Kevin Bacon was in a movie. It was a reinvention of The Invisible Man, called Hollow sure. Man.
Yeah, I remember.
I watched it with my now deceased father. And at the time, I don't know if you remember at one point before they do the experiment, Kevin Bacon tells this joke that involves Superman seeing the Invisible Woman sunbathing.
Yeah.
And the punchline is Wonder Woman says, what the heck was that? And the Invisible Man says, I don't know, but my backside's hurting.
Yeah, yeah.
My dad, he made a comment on that. There's times he was very, he could take, he thought jokes are hilarious. There's others he would almost like seriously analyze a joke. Uh-huh. And when he saw that, and he says, this will go full circle to what you're saying there. He says, these are all doctors that spent a minimum of 7 years of their life going into debt to get out of it. People that have that high of a responsibility and commitment to invest such time and critical upfront resources, you call it front loading here, people tend not to make jokes like that. Mm. And what I'm getting at is it's very easy. The average human can't do the front loading part like you're saying. It's and don't get me wrong, I'm not making fun of, or I'm not like looking down my nose at some, Kevin Bacon making that joke. But the average human being, they're I'm going to go into debt for 7 years and it's up to me to pass, and then maybe I can start climbing out of it, and yeah, then it will be worth it. Man, in your 20s, you told the joke, or you told the story about going to Belize. Most people are thinking of that stuff. They're not thinking of, you know what, I can sacrifice a year. I know many people that have like started their apprenticeship in welding. They moved out west by Edmonton, the oil fields in Alberta, Calgary, mm-hmm. that area. And they come back after a year and they've got a solid down payment on their house because they sacrificed that life up front. Right. That's what it takes, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it really does. It's, you know, and I wish more people could see that like, you know, you can do it. It's just going to be pretty uncomfortable for a little while, but it means that whatever comes after, once you get out of that uncomfortability, it's going to be great forever, you know?
Yeah.
So
absolutely.
Or mostly, I mean, there'll be ups and downs, but you've really built the life you want, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. We're all going to be dead anyway soon. So what does it matter?
This is true. Yes.
All right, Ray, we're going to get into the last two segments of the show here. The first one we're going to do is a little segment we call The Rundown. It is a series of random questions that we have compiled over the years. Individually, they don't mean much, but put together, they just sort of start to paint a picture of someone, who they are, what they are, how they are, etc. So are you ready?
I don't think I could prep for this. I think this is as ready as it's going to get.
Perfect. what is the largest, deadliest mammal that you think you could take in a fight to the death with your bare hands?
Bare hands only?
Yeah.
I'm inspired by a story that came out a handful of years ago where there was a starving mountain lion and a guy strangled the mountain lion because it was trying to eat him, and he killed it with his bare hands. So a malnourished mountain lion.
Okay.
Maybe. Okay. Maybe. Malnourished, though.
Yeah. Something. Yeah. Missing an eye. Maybe, you know.
Are you familiar with the infamous Canadian geese?
I mean, I like the black and white and gray ones. Those big. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I socialist geese, I call them. Yeah.
That's not a mammal, but those things are vicious. We call them cobra chickens out yeah. here because they hiss and they flap.
Yeah.
And they're basically, they're out of, you know how in the mammal world there's cats? Well, cobra chickens are like the cats of the bird world.
Yeah. Yeah. Geese are vicious, man.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to fight a rabbit, especially in Washington, because they all have like infernal wart horns growing out of their head right now.
Yeah.
Have you ever seen that?
Yeah, yeah. It's kind of a gnarly thing.
I don't know what mammal I would want to fight. Like, I think it would be, and obviously the animal's motivated to kill me, obviously.
Right, right. They know you're in the octagon, you did the weigh-in.
Yeah. So it's like one of those AI videos where we kind of punch at the same time and don't connect and we're still standing
yeah.
there.
Yeah. You're doing a catch weight somewhere like 180, something like, you know.
Dude, I'd have to drop, believe it or not, but I'd have to drop like 60 pounds to hit 180.
Jesus Christ, man.
That's heavy. Like I think I could lose a couple of pounds, but
yeah,
that's,
well, work it into the contract that, you know, the cougar will get heavy, you know, work 16 ounce gloves, you work with 12, something like that, just to offset the weight.
He gets 16 ounce gloves, I get a shotgun. How about that?
There you go. All right, so a malnourished mountain lion, or yes. maybe, do you guys call them cougars, pumas, or mountain lions up there?
All of the above.
All of the above. Okay.
Yeah. Tomato, tomato.
Yeah. Tomato, tomato, tomato.
Elephant pachyderm.
All right. If you could travel anywhere in the world, anywhere, there's a catch to this question. If you could travel anywhere in the world, what would it be? Your number one destination. But the caveat is, you have to travel with the person you hate the most in life. Where would you go and who would that be?
I'd just go somewhere with family so we could all kick the crap out of that person. Like, it's pretty straightforward.
What's the destination?
Destination would be downtown Hamilton, Jackson Square Garden, where everybody like pretty much likes to knife fight. If I'm going there with my mortal enemy.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Just a good chance they're getting shivved by the end of the
yeah,
night.
Yeah, like my last name's Jameson. We'll pretty much just reenact Gangs of New York and away we go.
Maybe the Red Rabbits or what is it? Is it what's the
Everybody's fighting over, no, I represent God more. No, I do. Prepare to meet the true God. They're all just fighting.
sounds like one way to, yeah, you just creep out of the disc. You're just like, oh, I'm out of here. Well, this guy handles this. What is a guilty pleasure song of yours?
Guilty pleasure song?
Yeah, a song that's like, you know, considered bad or like, you know, that like, you know, like, you don't, you know, you want to hear it, but you know, you roll up to a stop sign and there's cars around, you roll up the window, you know?
So the thing about awkwardness, if you sing along, people get more uncomfortable than you could possibly feel.
Sure.
Which is really awesome.
Yeah.
There's a lot of Taylor Swift songs I enjoy thoroughly.
Okay.
We could throw that in there. Popcorn by Hot Butter.
Is there a particular Taylor Swift song? What's your go-to T. Swifty song?
Wildest Dreams. Do you know that one?
I don't. Shake It Off's the only one I have on a playlist.
Oh, that one's shooken right off my playlist. That's too mainstream. We need deep cut.
No,
Taylor.
I love. This is such a weird thing. I have a weird thing for like female bubblegum pop. There's something about it.
Yeah, I can respect that. I understand. That
you,
makes
you
sense.
You shouldn't. But but I appreciate that. So some Taylor Swift, you said maybe that's your guilty pleasure.
Yeah, I'll just go with that one. There's lots of songs in there that I enjoy and I could probably sing from like start to finish.
All right. If you were a rapper, what would your rap name be?
Tawanda.
Tawanda?
Yeah, so my
like Wander, like to
no,
wander or like
No, Tawanda is an African name. It means we are many.
Okay.
So I'd be like one of those crazy ICP caliber rappers, just like many personalities. I'd be Tawanda. There you go.
You do a duet with Snow. He's a Canadian rapper, right? That's your guy. He's
Snow. Yeah. That Aliki boom boom now. Yeah, I know that one.
Come on,
I haven't heard Snow in a while. I'm gonna have to listen to me some Snow now.
Yeah, that's on my. That's I got some Snow on some playlist too.
Yeah, that's good.
Yeah. What would the name of your autobiography be?
You know what? Somebody asked me a similar question. I'm going to go with the same answer. Be your best bard.
Be your best what?
Bard. B-A-R-D.
B-A-R-D.
In fantasy and D&D, bard is basically somebody who makes people around them perform better using music. Mm. In D&D, it's kind of expressed through magic and music.
Okay.
I'm only one person. And no matter how well I can do at a thing, a group of people around me doing that thing can probably perform significantly better. So I'd rather bolster them up to get a better result. Be your best bard.
Okay, be your best bard.
You putting people in good moods would be an example of bardic inspiration.
Okay, right on. There you go.
So
that okay, what is your... drink of choice, not necessarily alcoholic, just anytime. What's your go-to drink?
You know what? This is a very weird combo. Well, people think it's weird. I don't feel it's weird. It's nothing like crazy. Want equal parts orange juice with cranberry juice.
That's not that crazy. It's
not crazy, but like whenever I ask somebody, they're like, oh, that I've never heard of that. I mean, tastes great to me.
Yeah.
But
well, it's not like it's not like a drink that, you know, it's not like rum and coke or, you know.
Sambuca and meth or something like that. You know. We're not going hard today, boys.
I'll just stick with, you know, crayon and orange.
Okay. I go hard.
If you had to kill one endangered species, eliminate them completely, which one would it be and why?
Oh man, endangered species. Does the Jonas Brothers count? No, that was a bad joke. How about endangered species, zebra mussels?
Zebra mussel? Is that an endangered species?
An invasive species here in Canada. They come from, I forget where, but they are like barnacles on steroids. They damage boats. They have no natural predators, so they just multiply and take over entire lakes.
Well, I mean, what the hell is the predator of a barnacle?
Well, that's the thing. Out in the, you need like the equivalent of something that hunts down oysters, cracks them open, and eats them. You would need something of that caliber to kill them all off.
All right. Zebra mussel. All right. That's an interesting one. Do you believe in ghosts? And if so, have you had any experiences?
No to both.
No to both. Never?
Never.
Don't believe in ghosts at all?
No, I don't believe people float around aimlessly when they die.
Okay. Ghosts can mean a lot of things, you know.
Okay, you know what? With that said, define ghost then. And then I can give you a more accurate answer.
Well, I would say, we'll say supernatural aberrations.
But like people that used to be alive, or what would
it would be an experience where you would describe it to someone as a ghost, but it doesn't mean it's that. Like I'll put it this way. So like I've got a lot of theories about ghosts because I lived in a haunted house for over 5 years. Very haunted. I mean, like I saw things move. They locked me out of my house. They locked me in my house. I heard stuff. I saw stuff. I felt it's like it was crazy. Stuff would appear in my house that I'd never bought or purchased or had. It was very intense. But the I've got two different theories that aren't necessarily mutually exclusive, but float around my head as far as ghosts. One is involves like quantum physics and string theory. So I don't know how familiar you are with that, but you know, I'm a dumb guy.
Basically, at the end of Interstellar, when the dad's talking to his daughter to solve an equation later on.
I didn't make it that far because I hate Christopher Nolan. I think he's a fucking a self-important douchebag that beats off to a picture of himself beating off. So he loves himself some Nolan, that's for sure. You know, I'll give him the second Batman beyond
so
that.
So who are you traveling to with him?
So basically like layers of reality, you know, like unlimited realities that are with slight variations, right?
So there's like overlapping influence that's bumping onto you and your area, essentially.
Right. I think sometimes they might bump into each other and it seems, you know, that's why it could be seem like it's someone familiar or they used to live in that house, because in the other reality, maybe they're still alive and they do live in that house still.
Like multiverse, essentially.
Yeah,
not to belittle it, but just
essentially. Yeah. And like part of the reason it seems aggressive or scary sometimes is because you're also appearing as a ghost to them. So
what you see as a ghost is like screaming at you because they're thinking you're a ghost as well.
Right. You know, or like so I think there's that. The other possibility is, and this seems more realistic to me, but I don't know. So like elk, you live in Canada, you're familiar with elk. Mm-hmm. Elk see through a process that's called edging, meaning like they kind of see things a little more flat, and really it's like movement. They see more movement.
And they enjoy the movement longer as they're edging. So
yeah, they just keep going and keep going. And they never fully see anything, never to completion. So they only see things like when it moves, right? It's like a different way than we see things. And you know, we are aware that our sight, we see a very limited amount of colors and things like that, right? And our human eyes. So there might be things that are happening around us all the time that we just don't see, right? Like
right.
There could be these specters and wraiths around us all the time. We just don't see them because of the way our vision is so limited. You know what I'm saying? And sometimes, you know, you might see one because of, for certain reasons, or sometimes, you know, that's why I think like, animals are more sensitive to it, because maybe they see them. They have senses that are a little different, stuff like that.
So I guess to refine my answer based off of how you've laid it out before me, I do believe these things can happen. I know there's people that like cry wolf and claim it, but I do believe there are times when these things happen. I don't think they're ghosts. That would be my shortest possible answer to give you.
You don't think it's like a dead person still hanging out?
No.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't necessarily either. I just think there is more, like I said, a supernatural aberration, what that means. I don't know exactly. So.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Okay. In a doomsday slash zombie apocalypse scenario, how long do you think you'd survive for?
In my current infrastructure that I live in, I'd get out of the city.
Yeah, smart.
I know a couple of people that have cabins. Potentially that. I have a buddy that has a cabin on an island.
That All would right. probably well, I be think a smart that, scenario. I think you might want to look into Leaving that. I don't think that's going the... well. The island, you know, I think that island got taken, cabin. You know, taken down.
That island would be, yeah. The leaving the city, although it would be the first go-to that everybody else would do, is I'd go to grocery store and get as many as like non-perishable foods to grab as possible.
Yeah.
Whatever I can grab out of the house to protect myself with. I've got a crowbar. I have a machete that's actually like stainless steel, so it wouldn't rust.
Okay.
That would be the start, but I don't know how long I would last. I really don't know, because we don't know how far, or I don't know all the external scenarios. Like, are all the exiting roads destroyed in the city? Well, that changes everything. Is this doomsday and apocalypse plague related? Well, that also changes everything. I honestly could not give you an answer on that.
All right.
It's so much going on there.
There's a lot, yeah. So, okay, let's go. How about last one? Best / worst blackouts.
You mean like me losing memory?
Well, yeah, like drinking blackout.
Well, joke's on you, man. I've never had alcohol before.
Really? Never once? No. Oh, my God.
Dude, so here's the story behind this, because it's an interesting one. Yes, granted, caveat, there is religious influence, and especially through my childhood, that had an influence on that. The other one is, I look exactly, well, there's two things. First one is, on my mom's side of the family, I look exactly like my grandpa. The last 30 years of his life, he was in AA. I believe I have what is called an addictive personality. If something's fun, let's do it to the max. Like, let's go. And I think I genetically have a disposition. I think if I enjoyed alcohol, it would be the same thing. I wouldn't have an off switch. So I've just always held back from that. On the flip side, my old man is from Ireland. There's my last name. I think I'm just bad genetic potential. Yeah. So I think if I had a couple of good blackout times, I think that would be the focal point of my life, and it would ruin it.
There's only one way to find out.
That's right. No. It's Russian roulette, man.
All right.
My best man, when we were younger, I used to be the DD. We'd go have a good time in a bar, but blackouts, not my game, that's for sure. All right.
Well, you're not missing. It's the best / worst experience you'll ever have. So
I've heard, yeah. It sounds like a terribly good time.
All right. So that's it for the rundown. We got one last bit, then we're going to get out of here. This is the part of the show where I write jokes for the our guests to try to be a comedian for the evening. So let's got three options here. We've got the family friendly, we've got the a little spicy joke, and then we have the you're about to be canceled and have your Twitter deleted joke. So which segment would you like, and I'll send it over to you.
Okay, my children are still awake, so I'll take the medium one.
The medium?
My kids are awake. They might be able to hear me. So
okay, there's a family-friendly one also, if you want
Sure. Okay. I trust your judgment.
Okay.
This is where he starts laughing inside. Sends me the worst one
No,
possible.
This is really not that bad. Okay. Here, I'm sending it over to you.
All right.
And this is Ray Jameson. Have you ever done stand-up comedy before?
No, but I've watched a lot of Seinfeld. Can I just speak like that?
All right. Well, this is Ray Jameson on his stand-up comedy debut.
All right. So do I have to read ahead of time, or should I just go for it?
You can give it a once-over so you know that if you want to work on the delivery. But whatever works for you.
Okay, let's do this. You ready?
Yeah.
Applebee's is selling a $600 date night gift card for $100, which seems like a deal, except that anyone who would buy $600 worth of Applebee's could actually never get a date.
Boom! There you go. Ray Jameson, everyone, nailing it from downtown. Boom. Look at that. Love it.
Right okay. on, man. Thank you.
All right. Ray, anything else you want to say before we get out of here? Where can people find you, find the books, order the books you got, and follow you on social media, etc.?
Well, I will give you two things. First, I'll give you all of my socials. You can find me on Facebook as DM Ray. DM is short for Dungeon Master because I love to play me some D&D. You can also find the Madcaps Facebook page. And you can find me on Instagram as Raymond the DM. DM Ray was taken, unfortunately. The Madcaps pre-launch for issues 1 to 3, the entire mini series, you can get, if you look that up, we just hit 125 followers, which is really, really awesome.
That's great.
Anybody listening, if you've ever had friends that you miss and your very essence craves to see them in such a way where if you're to see them for 5 minutes passing through a city in a parking lot or sit down for supper or maybe a bit more, and the next day you wake up and you're like, man, I really needed that, then I guarantee you, you will at least enjoy this book, at the very least. It has a fantasy theme to it, and I got four real weird and quirky characters. They're all different from each other. These are not the mightiest individuals in the realm. The very first issue, three of them almost get overrun by the undead. And they get saved by local town guards. And if this was Star Trek, that's the equivalent of Spock getting saved by a bunch of red shirts. Every human being likes the paragon of awesome, the Superman, everybody, the things they want to strive to be. Most human beings can't relate to that. This book is different. You will be able to relate to these characters. Definitely give it a shot, the Madcaps. And the last thing I'm going to say is Kill Stan, number 4. Deese has been so kind to send me issues 1 to 3. I am going to be releasing a review of it shortly. And check out his pre-launch. And more importantly, I shouldn't say more importantly, but if you go to my Facebook profile, if you follow it right now, you'll be notified when there is, my apologies. You'll be notified when the review is ready. You'll be able to see that on your reel. But I guarantee you it's a good time. I won't say anything yet. I don't spoil it. The only thing I'll say is it's really funny for a guy who's trying to have a glorious death, making fun of C-list goons that can't actually hit him with a bullet, and he's just trash talking them as he's bleeding out of his mouth. It's a good time.
All right, well, thanks for the stirring endorsement. We appreciate it. So guys, follow Ray, check out his work, follow the Kickstarter, the pre-launch page. That's like he said, that makes such a difference on launch. So follow it, and when it launches, you know, get the book. I'm sure you can catch up on all the past issues too, or you know, get them in advance so you know what you're getting into. Give him a follow on social media and get updates on everything going on. And guys, as for me, go to deesecomedy.com, check out everything going on across the network. Live dates again, California shows. I'm excited to come back to California. People have been asking for a while. I'm finally gonna do it, so you better all come out to shows or I will disown you forever. It's gonna be fun. I'm happy to be back down there though. And again, the Kickstarter for number 4 of Kill Stan follow that also. And yeah, we're going to, I've got a thing I'm going to announce probably later this week that we're doing for that Kickstarter, which yeah, I'm excited for. So, and I think some people have been asking for this also. So hopefully you guys will be excited too. And then come back next week, guys. Former producer Traz Swartout and conspiracy theory expert, my buddy, is going to be back on the show. We're doing our monthly roundup on what's going on in the world, politics, American fuckery, and so much more. And there's a lot going on. We've got a lot to catch up on.
So much delicious material to work with.
Yeah, we're at war again. You know, we still haven't figured out what's up with Epstein. There's so much going on. Come check it out. We got a lot to talk about. So that's it, guys, for the Social Hour. I am Deese. And for Ray, thank you all very much. We appreciate you being here, and we will see you all next week.